it fails them. Or if we turn to man-made organizations, going to end up ashamed of it. It's going to fail us. And whenever we see an institution that has failed us, we can pretty well rest assured right there that that's really not the church. Because God is not going to fail us. So we're ashamed. Rather, the strength of Pharaoh shall be your shame, and your trust in the shadow of Egypt, your confusion. All it does is to confuse you. You think you've got something. You think you really have something that's going to help you. And when it turns out to be nothing, when it turns out to have no more power than you have, really, all it does is confuse you. You say, well, what is right? I really don't know what's right. I'm just going to chuck the whole thing. I believe I'll just forget about it all. And that's what many and many a person has done. They just forgot about the idea of religion simply because it has given them nothing but confusion. Now, beginning in verse 4, he starts to describe what they really are doing. And now here's Isaiah sitting there in Judea and seeing what's happening. Just like we today might observe our government in action. We see all the Medicare and the Medicaid and the giveaway programs and the food stamps and all that. And we're watching it happen. We can't do anything about it. But we might venture a comment every once in a while. It looks like it's going to be the wrong thing. It's going to bring us under someday, you know. But so here's Isaiah watching this happen. And here's how he describes it. For his princes were at Zon, and his ambassadors came to Hanes. Now these towns, or these regions of Zon and Hanes, were places that were probably the capital of areas of Egypt. Places that the king or the pharaoh had resided. Be like our going to Austin or going to Washington, D.C., you know. So they sent princes. They sent ambassadors. They sent people who were high up in the government down there to make this alliance. They were all ashamed of a people that could not profit them, nor be in help nor profit, but a shame and also a reproach. Now, what it really turned out is these ambassadors came back ashamed because they didn't get any real help. The alliance that they made, or the alliance they tried to make, turned out to be nothing. Kind of like, you know, here the other day, Jimmy Carter got together with the Russians, and he made a proposal, going to make a big arms agreement, and they rapped his knuckles. They said, not yet, we don't want it. Forget about it. And he had to come back and do some explaining to the people as to why it didn't work. Well, this is what happened. Verse 6, the burden, now here's Isaiah, this is what he sees, the burden of the beasts of the south. Now, these beasts would have been some kind of animals, camels or asses or something that they loaded down with gifts that they were taking to the south. He saw these caravans leaving out of Jerusalem, burdened down with gifts for the south, the burdens of the beasts of the south, into the land of trouble and anguish, from whence come the young and old lion, the viper and fiery flying serpent. They will carry their riches upon the shoulders of young asses, and the treasures upon the bunches of camels to a people that shall not profit them. Here's what they were doing. Now, they were sending these beasts to the south, burdened down with these gifts. And they went into a land that he says it's a land of trouble and anguish. And truly, Egypt was a land of trouble and anguish. In the past, it had been a land of great trouble and anguish for God's people. Well, they were kept captives there for some 400 years in the land of Goshen. It got so intolerable to the point that their male children were being put to death. The Pharaoh wouldn't let them worship God. He wouldn't let them go. They were slaves. It was a land of trouble and anguish. It was a land of trouble and anguish at this very time, because here they were turning to them for help when they wouldn't be able to get any help. It would be a land of trouble and anguish in the future time, because when the chips were down, Egypt would fail them. So whether you're speaking of the past, the present, or the future, Egypt was a land of trouble and anguish. And even today, Egypt is symbolically still referred to in the scriptures as a land of trouble and anguish. When the children of Israel left Egypt and they were in the wilderness, and God was feeding them manna from heaven, they didn't lack anything. Their feet didn't get sore, and their clothes didn't wear out, and they had all they could eat and drink. Well, they murmured they wanted to go back over into Egypt so they could have some of those cucumbers. And so to go back into Egypt is always then referred to as wanting to turn away from God and go back to slavery and captivity. So they went into the land of trouble and anguish, from whence come. Now to get down there and to go into this land, well, they had to go through a lot of trials, it seems. And he names what these people willing to go through with just to get down there. From whence come the young and old lion. Well, they had to face wild beasts to get there, young and old lion. The viper. Now, I understand that the viper was a very poisonous snake. The description of him is that he's about 2 feet long, and he is as big around as a man's arm, and I have a little arm, so he'd be bigger than my arm, probably. And he had a real wide mouth so that he could inhale a lot of air, and he'd inhale large quantities of air and then hiss this air out and make a lot of noise. And when he bit, well, his bite was fatal. We read about Cleopatra, you know, who killed herself by having one of these vipers hidden, and when she got ready, she just let it bite her, committed suicide. So it was the land of this viper, and they claim that they were most plenteous in Egypt. And fiery flying serpent. Now the fiery flying serpent was another kind of a snake that we read about frequently in the Old Testament. And it was a snake that would climb up into trees. And these trees were so hard to climb up into that rather than climb down and into another one, it would get on a branch and it would spring from one to the other. And just go from tree to tree that way. And it would also spring on a man or a beast that way. So you might just walk in along, and here comes a snake just flying out of a tree at you. And it also had a poisonous bite. So they were going into this land with the lions and the adders and the flying serpents. They will carry their riches upon the shoulders of young asses and their treasures upon the bunches of camels. Now they were taking riches out of Israel down to Egypt trying to make this treaty with them. And Isaiah could see the folly of it. Look at all the trouble they're going to. How foolish. All for nothing. Carrying our riches away and giving them to a people who are not going to be able to help us. And so he writes about it here. To a people that shall not profit them. For the Egyptians shall help in vain and to no purpose. Therefore have I cried concerning this. Their strength is to sit still. Isaiah could see it was going to come to no good. And so his cry concerning this vain act on the part of his government, his cry was that their strength is to sit still. All the good you're going to get out of Egypt is to see them do nothing. They're not going to do anything. They're just going to sit still. If that's strength, if that's assistance, that's what you're going to get. Their strength is to sit still. We've all seen people, you know, and institutions today who it seemed this cry could have been made, their strength is to sit still. Do nothing. It promised anything, but do nothing. So in verse 8, he says he's going to record this, so that this fact that the Jews are a rebellious people. Now go, write it before them in a table, and note it in a book. Now, to write it in a table means it's going to be engraved on a stone. It's going to be made a permanent record of. We're going to engrave this like a little statue, or rather not a statue, but a monument. And we're going to write it in a book, that is, in a parchment, that it may be for the time to come, forever and ever. I'm going to fix it in such a way so that everybody's going to know about this folly. And certainly that's the reason we're able to read about it here tonight, because he did fix it, so that we will know how to learn about it. It's written in a book for us. And this is what he's going to write. This is Isaiah's commentary on the times. That this is a rebellious people. Lying children. Children that will not hear the law of the Lord. They're rebellious. They're lying. They'll not hear the law of the Lord. And of course, we can make many, many remarks about this ninth verse. But I think we can all see the picture very easily. People who are rebellious, the next step and the hand-in-hand act with rebellion is to lie. One of the greatest ways to really show contempt towards somebody is to lie to them. And then let them find out that you've been lying to them all along. You don't care. Children that will not hear the law of the Lord. You know, there are not too many people that hear the law of the Lord today. Isaiah was talking about his time. But I think that his record here is very timely. Which say to the seers, see not. And to the prophets, prophesy not unto us right things. Speak unto us smooth things. Prophesy deceits. Here's what they were saying to the seers. And a seer is another word for a prophet. It's an older word for a prophet, as I understand it. But this is what the people said to the prophets, maybe not in so many words, but by their actions. They told these prophets, don't prophesy to us. And to these seers, don't see the things that we need to know. Prophesy not unto us right things. We don't want to hear the truth. Don't tell us anything about it. No doubt as Isaiah had pointed out the folly. Maybe he'd gone out to the head of one of these caravans and said, you're taking this treasure to Egypt? You know, it's not going to do any good. He said, go away, old man. We don't want to hear anything about it. Don't tell us about that. And this is not a brand new attitude either. In Amos, 7th chapter, we have the case of Amos, and when we studied Amos, we covered this, but I'd like to go over it again. You know, Amos was a prophet to Israel. He came from the south up to the kingdom of the north. And as he prophesied to Israel about their impending destruction, the priest who was following after the ways of the people, the priest came to Amos and said to him, and his name was Amaziah, also Amaziah said unto Amos, O thou seer, go, flee thee away into the land of Judah, and there eat bread, and prophesy there. But prophesy not again any more at Bethel, for it's the king's chapel, and it is the king's court. They told Amos, go back home, Amos. Go back down to Judah. You eat your bread down there, and you prophesy down there. Go have your nice little life there, and leave us alone. Don't prophesy up here at Bethel anymore. Well, this is the king's court. You're intruding. Then answered Amos and said to Amaziah, I was no prophet, neither was I a prophet's son, but I was a herdsman and a gatherer of sycamore fruit. He said, I don't make my living this way. I didn't start out being a prophet. I tended to the flock. And I gathered sycamore fruit for a living. And the Lord took me as I followed the flock, and the Lord said unto me, go prophesy unto my people Israel. Now therefore hear thou the word of the Lord. Thou sayest, prophesy not against Israel, and drop not thy word against the house of Isaac. And he goes on and tells him what's going to happen. But so that wasn't a new thing for them to say to the prophets, to prophesy not. Don't tell us the truth. We don't want to hear what the word has to say. That was nothing new. Amos had it happen to him. And it certainly does happen today. People today who will teach the truth, who will really genuinely teach what the Bible has to say, are not going to be very popular. They're not going to have a large crowd of people flocking in to hear what they have to say at all, because that's not what the crowds want. The crowds want somebody who will speak unto us smooth things. That is, things are not going to ruffle our little way of life. We don't want to have to change anything. We don't want anybody to tell us that we're wrong. We don't want anybody to tell us some things that are going to make us feel uncomfortable. We want you to tell us the flowery, smooth things. Make everything look all right to us. Prophesy unto us smooth things. Prophesy deceits. In other words, tell us lies. And they're not going to say, in so many words, tell us lies, but they are going to say, we don't want to stand for this. How many congregations of the church have had somebody get up and preach something that was the truth, And then the elders or the leaders would call that preacher aside and say, look here, now you're going to leave this subject alone. You're going to make some people mad. You're stepping on some toes now, and you're going to run some people off from here. Just leave that subject alone. There's plenty of things you can talk about without that. There's all kinds of things you can preach on. Never get on that subject. You leave that alone. And so if they keep their job, they're going to have to leave it alone. You better right, they're going to have to leave it alone. They can't teach it. The preacher may know it's the truth, but he can't tell it and keep his job. And so what are they telling that man in effect? They're telling him, prophesy not unto us right things. Speak unto us smooth things. We don't want to rock the boat any here. Prophesy deceits. But I'll tell you, there's not a congregation any place. It's not going to have people come into it who are not living the right kind of a life. And they're going to have to be told and instructed some way or another to ever straighten up their lives. They're going to have to be told some things that are not so smooth. They're going to have to be told some things you're not going to set so well with them. And if we just stay on the smooth things, then we're going to find ourselves eventually deceiving and telling lies. And we can't do that. For the truth is going to cut through to everybody. It's going to get to everybody with some things that they're not so eager to want to hear. Some things that are going to cause some discomfort. Some things that are going to cause them to be a little bit ruffled. Some things that are going to cause them to have to change or quit. That's what it boils down to. You're going to either have to make some changes. You're going to have to get out because the heat's going to get too hot. You're not going to be able to stand this. And so this verse 10 is certainly a thing that's even being fulfilled today. And it happened way back during the time of Isaiah. Happened during the time of Amos. Prophesy not unto us right things. Speak unto us smooth things. Prophesy deceits. And he further says, get you out of the way. Turn aside out of the path. Cause the Holy One of Israel to cease from before us. In other words, you get off of that straight and narrow path. Quit walking such a narrow way. Turn aside to a different way. We want to go a different way, Mr. Prophet. We don't want to go that way. We want you to turn aside out of the path. Turn you out of the way. We want you to cause the Holy One of Israel to cease from before us. And this literally means quit telling us about God. Quit bringing His name up. Quit continually reminding us of what God wants. We don't want to hear about God. We want to hear some other things. And so it is today. You can turn on your radio and you can hear all kinds of things preached about by the various preachers, except for what God really wants to have taught. They can talk about the government, they can talk about this and that, and tell all kinds of stories, and have very, very little about the Bible. So in verse 12, he tells them the results of this, the results of their having this attitude. Wherefore thus saith the Holy One of Israel, now the very one that they'd said caused the Holy One of Israel to cease from us, from before us, Isaiah comes right back at him with it again. He says, wherefore thus saith the Holy One of Israel. You don't like what he says? I'm going to tell you what he's going to say. Because you despise this word. Now they despise what God would have to say to them. Because you despise this word and trust in oppression and perverseness and stay thereon. You trust in oppression. You'd rather have something that's going to be a conflict, something that's going to really be your downfall, and perverseness. To be perverse is to be opposite to that which makes for the true peace, and stay thereon. That is, you rest or you depend, you lean on these things instead of on the things of God. Therefore, this iniquity shall be to you as a breach ready to fall, swelling out in a high wall, whose breaking cometh suddenly at an instant. Now you compare these people to a wall, a high wall. And this wall is swelling out. That is, it's leaning over and it's swaying and it's about to fall. And as you look down and eye down the wall, you can see where one part of it makes a big bow in it. I've had fences like that, and it wasn't a very good fence. The old cows could go right through it before it was leaning over on the ground. Matter of fact, I got one on the other side of the railroad dump. It's like that right now. But as they look at this wall and see how it's leaning, the wall was no doubt made of brick and mortar and something that couldn't just stretch like a barbed wire could. And it had a breach in it, had a break in it. And so he says, whose breaking cometh suddenly at an instant. Here it's been gradually swelling and gradually leaning and gradually getting out of line all this time. And that's why you get used to it. You get used to seeing that crooked wall there. It looks like it's the way it ought to be. But suddenly, it breaks. It gives way and it crumbles. You don't have a wall left there. He said, that's the way it's going to be. It shall be to you as a breach ready to fall, swelling out in a high wall, whose breaking cometh suddenly at an instant. And he shall break it as the breaking of the potter's vessel that is broken to pieces. He shall not spare. Just like if you took a fragile pot made out of clay that the vessel made by the potter, and you took it and just broke it into pieces. And he shall not spare. So that there shall not be found in the bursting of it a shard to take fire from the hearth or to take water withal out of the pit. Now to take fire from the hearth would be a piece of pottery big enough to reach into the hearth and get a coal of fire. Not going to be enough, a piece big enough to get a coal of fire out of the hearth. Nor is it going to be a piece left together enough that you can go get water out of the well. That's how much it's going to be broken. You people are going to be worthless as a nation. You're not going to exist. You'll not be known as a vessel. Not have any use. The breaking is going to be so complete. He said, he shall not spare. Now this was fulfilled whenever the Babylonians took the people into captivity. And it was further fulfilled, even more ultimately fulfilled, whenever the Romans destroyed the temple in A.D. 70. For thus saith the Lord God, the Holy One of Israel. Now, here again, he brings up this name, the Holy One of Israel. You resent something about the truth, something about the Bible, the person who has the truth is not going to let down just because you don't like it. He's going to keep on with it. And Isaiah puts it right back to him. You want to take the name of the Holy One of Israel away from you? I give it back to you. But in this beginning in verse 15, he shows them the way to peace. He shows them a way to remedy this. You know, the Bible is complete. It doesn't just name the dire consequences, but it also gives the way to remedy this. It doesn't just tell us the thing to take out of our lives, but it also equally gives us the thing to put back into our lives so that we're not going to be leading a vacuum. We'll lead a full life. So everything that has to be taken away, the Bible's got something else there to put in its place. And so he tells him in verse 15, for thus saith the Lord God, the Holy One of Israel, in returning and rest shall you be saved. In quietness and in confidence shall be your strength, and ye would not. Why, if you want to be saved, if you want to make an alliance that's going to give you strength and peace, return. Return to me and rest. That is, take comfort, take solace, take security in me. That'll save you. In quietness and in confidence shall be your strength. You don't have to go running off to somebody else. You've got the ability right here at home. That'll be your strength. Confidence in the Lord and in the word of the Lord. But he says, and you would not. You wouldn't have these things. And you know, it's a paradox. It's strange indeed that these people in Judea had everything that they needed for security and peace and self-sufficiency right there at home. They had the true God. They had his word. They had his prophets. They had the ability to follow what he had to say. But they went running off down to Egypt. They went to the land of trouble and anguish. They went where the old and the young lion was, where the adder and the flying serpent were. And they went carrying all their treasures off down there. Nothing but disappointment, nothing but shame, nothing but regret for it. But they had it all right there at home. And so it is with us today. we today have at our disposal, have all things that are necessary to be fully perfected and acceptable in His sight. Got it all right there at home. It's all right here. How many people have this chapter of Isaiah folded up at home someplace? Maybe it's pressing the flowers. Maybe it's hiding some note or something that they want to keep as a keepsake. They never bother to turn to it and read to it what it says. But it's all right there, available, all within an arm's reach for them. But they would not. Because they go running off someplace else, well, they're not going to get the satisfaction that they desire, and they're going to end up as a failure. But God has given them what they need, if they will only but take it. But ye said, here's what they did, rather than have peace and security and safety. But ye said, no, for we will flee upon horses. Therefore shall ye flee. And we will ride upon the swift. Therefore shall they pursue you, shall they that pursue you be swift. Now what they were going to do is depend upon the horses from Egypt. And so you say, we'll flee upon horses. Now whether this means that they were really planning to flee from Judea on horses, or whether it means that they were planning to use the cavalry of Egypt in their defense, doesn't matter. They were going to use the fleet swiftness of horses for their security. But he says, therefore shall you flee. It's just going to make you have to run that much more. And we will ride upon the swift. This would be to ride in a chariot. Therefore shall they that pursue you be swift. Now one of the strange things here is that in Deuteronomy 17, we have directions given here pertaining to the kings of Israel as to what they were not to do. And one of their restrictions was... 17, Deuteronomy 17, verse 16. But he shall not multiply horses to himself, nor cause the people to return to Egypt, to the end that he should multiply horses. For as much as the Lord has said unto you, ye shall henceforth return no more that way. Now this then, going back to Egypt and getting horses, this was a violation of the letter of the law, as well as of the spirit of the law. For it tells them very plainly here that you said, no, we will flee upon horses, therefore shall you flee, and we will ride upon the swift, therefore shall they that pursue you be swift. In the second chapter of Isaiah, verse 7, let me read this too. This is in harmony with this. Here again, he's criticizing the people for what they're doing and for what they had done. Their land also is full of silver and gold. Neither is there any end of their treasures. Their land is also full of horses. Neither is there any end of their chariots. Their land is also full of idols. They worship the work of their own hands, which they made with their own fingers have made. So there he's describing the sins of this country. They had gotten these horses and these chariots. And they were specifically told not to accumulate horses, nor to go back to Egypt to get the horses. And so they violated that. So in verse 17, we're almost through here. 1,000 shall flee at the rebuke of one. At the rebuke of five shall you flee, till you be left as a beacon upon the top of a mountain and as an ensign on a hill. Now what he's saying here is that just a few are going to be able to defeat you. 1,000 will flee at the rebuke of one. And the rebuke of five would make all of you flee. And you're going to run, you're going to flee, you're going to be beaten in battle to shreds until he says you'll be left as a beacon upon the top of a mountain and as an ensign on a hill. Now a beacon here was a mast that went on a ship, or it was a tree that had been stripped of all of its leaves, and so you're going to be left standing alone and naked on a hill as a beacon, as a warning to all other nations, that if you turn from God, that if you do not depend upon God as your aid and your help and your support, you're going to be left without any help. You're going to be left helpless And that, of course, is exactly what did happen to them. You'd be left as an ensign on a hill, an ensign.